Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Just a week and a day to go before the 2014 tax deadline. If you've already filed your return, nice going. If you have not, the going may not be so nice because of the impending filing deadline. Lots to do for many folks, and time is running out for answers to your tax questions. We're here to help on today's program. I'm Don Marsh. Joining me in studio is Lance Weiss. He's a CPA with the tax and accounting firm SFW Partners here in St. Louis, our go-to guy at tax time. Lance, good to see you again.
Don, thanks for having me. I always enjoy the show.
And I always know what time of year it is whenever I see you. It's generally April or very close to it.
And there are only 8 days left. And it seems like when it falls on a Tuesday, that's almost the worst day for it to fall on because then people think, oh, I have one more weekend. And then they wake up and it's Monday and they have a day and a half left.
So. And how is your life going as this deadline approaches?
You know, it's always a very busy time of year, but it's good to work hard when the weather's bad. And now we have spring to look forward to. So I think I've picked a wonderful career.
Well, the problem is that we're still looking forward to spring. There's no sign that it's actually arrived as yet.
It will be here soon.
Yeah, Lance, I'd like to start with something a little bit different this time. I have a friend who told me over the weekend that someone acquired his Social Security number, filed an income tax return, and is going to enjoy a fairly sizable refund. Apparently, there's a lot of this sort of thing going on.
Yeah, it really is. And the refund that your friend expected, you know, 99% of the time, maybe even almost 100% of the time, he will get that refund. But don't be surprised if it could take a year to get it back. It's a long process. The IRS is very aware of the problem. It's one of their, you know, top 10 or 30 dozen, I can't remember what they call them nowadays, tax problems that are out there. But this identity theft is rampant. At IRS.gov, they have a pretty good publication that talks about the identity theft. It's IRS Pub 4535. And there they talk about this is the process. When it happens, contact the attorney general. Go get your free credit report. You know, check everything else. Because there are really two different types of issues that can happen. One is they have your Social Security number and your address. And with enough other data, now they can go begin to clean out bank accounts and get credit cards and do real serious damage. The other type of issue, and I see this more often than I do the real theft issue, is somebody just keyed a number in wrong when they filed electronically and someone else filed a return using your Social Security number and many times by accident.
But I don't understand how this can happen when other things are required to be presented to the IRS, like a W-2 form. This guy still has his W-2s.
Well, the W-2s, almost all of them, an employer of almost any size, will file the W-2s electronically. So the IRS gets their copy of the W-2 electronically, and it has the individual's name and a Social Security number. When someone goes to file their return and they have your Social Security number, the IRS knows that names change. You know, and it's the number that they key in on. So when you get that letter from the IRS that says your Social Security number has already been used, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a victim of that bad identity theft where now all of your financial assets are at risk, but it does start a long, slow road to get the refund.
Oh, he's looking at this with horror because there are so many checkpoints along the way. Now, is the government out the money? If my friend is going to get his refund eventually and someone else has gotten it already, that's a double payment, it seems to me.
It is a double payment, and the IRS will begin a process and the Department of Justice and whoever else needs to get involved where they will look for that individual who stole that refund. If, in fact, it was a fraud, it's a crime, and they'll do everything they can to chase it down and get the money back.
And I guess the situation is exacerbated by the fact that more and more people are filing electronically.
Well, it's exacerbated, and it also helps identify the problem faster. So for this 2013 filing season, the IRS expects to get about 146 million 1040s. Over 80% of those will be filed electronically. And the nice thing about electronic filing is there's almost an instant identification of an already used Social Security number. So when that happens, you can start the process right away of, you know, here's my W-2. And what the IRS will do is start the process where now you have to prove to the service that you're the one entitled to use that Social Security number. So it's copies of driver's licenses or passports and birth certificates. it starts a process, but eventually you will get back what's yours.
Is there any one or two tips that you could give people to possibly avoid having to go through all of this?
No, you know, it's the same that you'll hear all over the place. Protect your Social Security number. Be careful online. You know, it's all the same stuff. And it happens. I've seen it happen to clients across the board, you know, those who are very hyper-protective of their numbers and those who aren't. It's not quite a random exercise, but I've seen it affect everyone.
Is this happening with people who do not file electronically?
It has happened in our client base, yeah. And we don't have many who don't file electronically anymore at all. But I've, you know, if we go back 4, 5, 6 years when e-filing was more new, you know, more of a new thing that not everyone wanted to try – I think I have seen it happen to both.
I won't stay on this subject too very long, but it also occurs to me in filing electronically that you have to have a special PIN number to do so. So the person, whoever has acquired the Social Security number, would, I guess, have to also know your PIN number.
Well, the PIN numbers can be assigned by the software that you're using. Now, with the situation with your friend, now that someone has already compromised his Social Security number with the IRS, they will send him a new PIN number so that when he goes to file his 2014 1040, the IRS will know to look for that specially assigned PIN with that Social Security number. And if one comes in before he files his return trying to use his Social Security number, then that return will get bounced out.
This whole digital world is a blessing and at times a curse, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, there are many other benefits, though, to electronic filing, just the lack of math errors and things like that, you know, used to occur with so many returns you won't find in an e-filed return.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's move along now to some of the things that people will be interested in, I suspect. Anything major different this year?
You know, the big things that are new and different for this 2013 filing season are the higher tax rates and the new taxes on the high income tax returns. You know, for example, if you're filing a married return and your adjusted gross income or your taxable income is up over $450,000, which not many returns are, but there are, you know, there's a new tax bracket. We're back to a 39.6% tax bracket, and your dividends are taxed at 20% instead of 15%. And there's a new net investment income tax on interest and dividends and capital gains. So there are new taxes that are out there, but they're really focused in on the high income individuals.
How about those who are at the other end of the scale, the people who might qualify as, let's call it what it is, poor?
Well, not a whole lot of change in that regard. I think if there is one positive change that's out there is that more and more of those returns can now be filed with the free file tools that the IRS has, and so many of the software companies are offering free file electronic filing of the returns, which leads to a much faster refund process.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good news for folks. Is it too early, Lance, to be thinking about extensions? Or maybe it's late and they should be thinking about extensions.
We are approaching the time where it is time to start thinking about extensions. And again, two relatively easy ways to do those. You can get your extension online at irs.gov. I think they have a link on the website called the Free File Extension link. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way and print out the form 4868 and send that off. Now, if you have a payment due with the return, the extension only gives you more time to file the form. It won't give you more time to actually pay the income tax. So to do a good extension, if you're usually real close to sometimes owing or sometimes getting some back, you're going to want to almost do the whole return to know, should you pay something in.
The penalty for not payment on time is pretty stiff, isn't it?
Yeah, the failure to pay the tax is a 5% per month penalty. Now, if you get close enough with the extension, then they'll waive that and only charge you the interest rate, which I think on the failure to pay on time, that interest rate I think is 0.5% per month. So not a horrible interest rate, but the penalties are bad if you owe a lot.
Boy, 5% a month, that's 60% a year.
Well, that gets capped at 25% total.
Oh, it does.
But still, a 25% hit on top is a hit on top.
What What about realizing that you've made a mistake after you've filed a return?
Yeah, on the amended returns, there's a process for that as well. And you can use a Form 1040X and then correct that error as soon as you find it. Now, I have a number of clients who want to file very early, you know, as early in January as they can, or maybe in February. And then inevitably what happens is they get an amended 1099 from another brokerage company or whatever it might be. Now, if you file that amended return by April the 15th, then there are no interest or penalties. You just file that superseding tax return, or if you want to do it as an amended tax return, you can do it that way. And there's no interest or penalties if it's all paid by April 15th.
But there are penalties if, in fact, you filed a return that has to be amended and you wait too long, you're paying that 5% a month.
Well, again, it depends on the size of the amount that's due compared to the total tax. So if it's less than a 10% change, then there's just the interest charge. But yeah, if it's a big number, the amended returns will cost quite a bit as well.
Of course, it doesn't work the other way. If you're waiting a long time to get your refund, there's no 5% added to that.
No, but they do pay interest. They do pay. Yeah. I think the interest rate they pay at is around 3 or 4%.
Not too bad. Well, many more questions ahead for Lance Weiss of SFW Partners, and we'll have those questions in just a moment. And I'm sure you listening out there have questions as well. So come on into the process at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. And if you prefer to send us a tweet, we'll take the tweet at STL on air. Back with Lance Weiss in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Lance Weiss in advance of next week's tax deadline. We're taking tax questions on today's program. But before we do that, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Laclede Group announced today that it's acquiring Alabama Gas Corporation for more than $1 billion. Allegas Co. is the largest natural gas utility in Alabama, serving more than 400,000 customers. The acquisition means the size of Laclede's customer base will grow to more than 1.5 million. After 161 days, baseball returns to Busch Stadium this afternoon. The St. Louis Cardinals home opener is set to get underway at 3:15 as the team takes on those Cincinnati Reds. And it's a semi-official harbinger of spring. The water is back on. Water fountains, bathrooms, and other water features have started flowing again the city's green spaces. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to Lance Weiss as we continue our conversation on taxes and answer tax questions. Before we go to the phones, Lance, one of the things I wanted to clarify is I think the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare, obviously receiving a lot of attention, and the IRS is playing a role in this, but there is no role for the IRS for 2013.
On these 2013 returns, you are correct. No role for the IRS, at least in the from the standpoint of dealing with the taxpayers. Certainly, plenty going on behind the scenes as they try to cobble together the resources to administer everything they'll have to administer, starting with these 2014 returns.
But it's a coming. But don't worry about it this year, folks.
It's a coming, and don't worry about it this year. And then also, there is a movement there to maybe push off for another period of time that individual mandate and those penalties. But, you know, like many things with that law, we'll see how it all plays out.
Can you deduct health insurance premiums?
You can still deduct health insurance premiums, but that is one of the changes on these 2013 returns compared to the 12. On the 2012 returns, you could deduct all of your medical costs and your prescription drugs and doctors and insurance premiums on Schedule A to the extent they exceeded 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. The law for 2013 on these returns is that it has to exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income. Now, there is a benefit if you're over 65 and have some other issues that where you can qualify, then you can use the 7.5% number, but it is harder for most people to deduct their health insurance costs.
How about medical savings accounts?
Medical savings accounts, the change there is that the most you can have deferred from your income through your employer is now $2,500. So they are making some changes with regard to the health savings accounts. And then there are still the – now, that's the FSA change. The HSA plans can can still take up to an amount of $6,500 for the family.
Okay. Well, I have more questions, but let's go to the audience. They're the ones that we really want to hear from, and let's start with Eric calling from St. Louis. Eric, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I have two questions. One is there any way to reclaim back tax credits that you didn't realize you could get further than the last, whatever it is, 2 or 3 or 4 years? Or are you just out that for good? And that's my first question. My second question is, somebody told me just yesterday that under the new Obamacare, that if you, let's say you qualify for a subsidy because of your income, and if you don't use the entire amount of the subsidy, does that actually get refunded to you at the end of the year? Is that something, is that part of it, or was that my imagination?
Okay, so the first question there, dealing with some credits that maybe you were due, they do have to be claimed within 3 years. So if they were 4, 5, 6 years ago, you won't be able to go back and amend the returns for those. And then on the Obamacare subsidies, I think with those, it's either it's use what you can use, and if you're entitled to more, I don't think anyone will be writing you a check for those.
Okay. Thanks.
Eric, thanks for the call. If you do qualify for a subsidy, does that count as income? Do you have to pay taxes on
it? No, the subsidies that you'll get to help reduce the amount of the premium you have to pay are not counted as income.
Okay. Heidi joins us now from Maplewood. Heidi, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. A few years back, I was self-employed and owed taxes, which I paid on time. But I now know that I should have invested in a 501k most likely and diverted those funds over. How long do I have to change that?
Yeah, so all the retirement plans need to be set up in the calendar year that the income was earned. So the 401k plans, if you wanted to do one for 2013, had to be set up in 2013. Now, the exception to that rule, though, is for IRA accounts. You can still make an IRA account up until Tuesday of next week for the 2013 tax year. But we can't go back to 12 or 11 or any of those older years and set one of those up for that benefit.
Okay, thanks so much.
Heidi, thank you for the call. Let's go to Susie calling from St. Louis County. Go ahead, Susie.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I do my own taxes, and I can't figure out where to put this. It's from a class action suit where they refunded my something from the title company. It was a payment, and then they gave me 9% interest. So it's like I got a refund on the recording fee of $96, and then the interest payment was $95.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
any
the
idea?
Again, depending on how the money came in, if the $96 came in as a settlement amount, that'll be on line 21 as other income. And if they actually call the $95 interest, then that'll be on Schedule B. But if instead they just said, here's 96 and here's 95, so you have 191 total dollars, unless they're breaking that separately out as interest income, chances are the full 191 would go on line 21 for other income.
Well, they call, they do break it down interest. They call it 9% simple interest.
Okay.
$95 and the recording fee of $96.
Yeah, so then the $95, if that is interest income,
uh-huh.
that would start out on Schedule B of
all
the
right.
1040 and then end up, Don, I don't have that form committed to memory. I think maybe line 8 is where the interest income falls out.
You know, we're not going to dock your pay for not knowing something from a 70,000-page document.
As many of those as I've looked at, and I can't recall the line. I think it's line 8 interest income.
Oh, and then you said line 21 because they refunded that fee?
Yeah, that's an other income line. That's
uh-huh.
where just all this type of miscellaneous and all these class action lawsuits where we win $96 and the lawyers win $96,000, the taxpayers pick that amount up as other income.
Oh, and then I don't have to put anything on my Missouri taxes because it'll be counted in this?
Exactly right. The starting point for your Missouri return is the federal adjusted gross income.
All right.
So because those amounts are already in your federal, then there's no special reporting for Missouri.
Okay. Yeah, because they didn't send me a 1099 form on this. So.
Yeah, it's if the amount's under $600, they don't have to send the 1099.
Mm-hmm.
And they do send the letter, though, and the IRS will probably know who received that payment. So you want to be sure to pick that up as income.
Oh, great. Okay, that's my question. Thank you very much.
This would apply, too, in a civil suit. If I sue you and I'm awarded $100,000, I'm going to pay tax on that.
You know, for the most part, yes, there are some exceptions to lawsuit winnings that are where they can be tax-free. For example, if the payment is for, you know, a physical damage, you know, you lose a finger or the use of an arm or whatever it might be, then those payments can be – they come in tax-free.
Yeah. All righty. We have an email from Bill. I was recently contacted by the city regarding back taxes for a prior year that all my records show were paid. Are employees liable if their W-2 shows taxes withdrawn but the employer failed to pay?
Oh, I think in that case that the employee should not be liable for those taxes. Now, if the individual lived in the city, perhaps they could be because that's a separate city earnings tax. But if it's the employer's responsibility to withhold and pay those in, I don't think they can come after the employee.
Yeah, well, that's we'll see. The city sometimes has a strange way of doing business. I've received some funny forms from the city, but be that as it may, I hope that problem is resolved. Email here from Bruce. I have my children in a private school, grades pre-kindergarten and first grade in the 2013 year. We get tuition assistance for both of my children. Do I need to report the tuition assistance as an income, or do I not need to report it at all? Since this is a private elementary school, I'm under the impression that the tuition itself is not tax deductible. Can you confirm?
Yeah, the tuition would not be tax deductible. Now, there are some IRA savings plans where you can withdraw money from the Coverdell IRA and use those proceeds to help pay for K through 8, not the pre-K portion, but the K through 8. And the earnings would not be taxable. And then that tuition assistance or the break they get there for whatever reason, that would not be a taxable benefit.
Right. Well, we have a question here from one of our producers because this is opening day for baseball season. And because you are wearing a shirt with the Cardinals logo, I assume you're into that. What about the visiting players, these multi-million-dollar athletes? Are they going to have to pay the city earnings tax?
The Cincinnati Reds will be paying both Missouri and city tax today. Yes, they will.
Boy, I wonder how do they collect that? I mean, that must be complicated.
You know, it's actually collected at the source. So when the Cincinnati Reds go to do the W-2s for, you know, all of their players, they'll receive W-2s in, now you caught me off guard here, what are there, probably 20 states that have Major League ball clubs. Mm-hmm. And they'll actually have withholding in all 20 of those states. And most of the ballparks are in cities that also assess some sort of an income tax on the earnings as well. So it's all taken care of at the entity level.
Boy, but that, what a boon for a city like St. Louis to – I mean, these guys make a lot of money. 1% is significant.
Well, there's a significant amount of cost that goes into that stadium down there too, though. Well, a lot of police services and all the street crews and everybody else that are down there. They need that revenue to cover those costs.
Okay. One of the things that comes up during these discussions, Lance, every year is the alternative minimum tax. I've talked to you many times about that. I'm still not fully sure I understand what that is all about.
Well, the AMT tax is still with us.
Yeah.
It is a second separate alternative calculation. It's almost the IRS's or Congress's attempt at a flat tax. It has two rates. There's a 26% bracket and a 28% bracket. There's no deduction allowed for state income taxes. No deductions allowed for your kids. About the only deductions you get would be for your primary home mortgage interest and your charitable contributions. And then you get a much bigger standard deduction, though, where on the personal return, on a married return, you're up around $12,000, $13,000 for the standard deduction. It's up in the $60,000s and $70,000s on the single and joint returns. Mm. So it's really targeted to hit those individuals. I'm going to say I almost never see it hit anyone with an income below about $120,000. Mm. So, again, it's only hitting about 10% of the income tax returns that are out there. But, you know, we're in a big city here, and you have a lot of two-income couples, and $110,000 doesn't feel like a lot of income. But in terms of the 146 million returns that get filed, that's up in that top 10%.
And that's the adjusted gross income?
That would be the adjusted gross,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Jacob joins us from Manchester. Go ahead, Jacob. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a college student, and I also have a part-time job, and my mother is supporting me, and she would like to claim me as a dependent, but we didn't know how it works as her claiming me a dependent and if I can still get my tax return from my job.
Are you under 24 years old?
Yes.
Okay. So when someone is between the age of 19 and 24 and they're a college student, full-time student, which means for at least one semester, more than a half-time student, then the test for whether or not you can claim yourself or your mom claims you, the only way that she would lose that exemption is that if you provide more than half of your support from your earned income. So from that regard, you know, unless the part-time job is a pretty high-paying part-time job and you're providing more than half of your own support, then your mom will be able to take that take you as a dependent.
Okay, thank you.
And then when you go to do your personal return, your standard deduction can go all the way up to, I think it's $5,100 this year to offset that W-2 amount. So there's also a good chance your mom benefits because she gets the exemption. And if that part-time income is less than $5,000 or so, there's also no income tax on his return.
Okay,
yes,
Jacob?
Thank you.
All right.
Yes, thanks.
What about in cases of divorce where one or the other parent claims the child as dependent? How has that worked out?
Well, you know, whenever a couple goes through a divorce, that tends to be one of the negotiated items that the divorce decree would talk about, who gets to claim the child in what year. Now, about 3 or 4 years ago, the IRS said, we are out of the business of trying to read divorce decrees and who can claim the child in whatever year it is. So the IRS said from this point forward, which again goes back at least 3 years now, they said the custodial parent gets to claim the child. Now, if it's the year where the non-custodial parent was to claim the child, then the custodial parent needs to file a Form 8332 so that the exemption can be released from their return and then claimed on the non-custodial spouse's return.
Boy, the person who comes up with the job of having to come up with the forms for the IRS, that's secure employment for a long time to come, isn't
it?
Well,
and if we think about how oftentimes Congress waits until December or January to actually pass the tax law, and then how under the gun all the software companies are to get those forms and their software and then approved by the IRS, that's why the filing season often gets pushed back until the middle of February before we can actually transmit a return.
When we talked last year, Lance, the unemployment picture in this country was a lot worse than it is now, although it is still bad now, needless to say. What about unemployment, unemployment compensation, unemployment benefits that people get?
Yeah, those amounts are subject to the income tax. Now, in many cases, that makes up the bulk of the income that the individual has, so that by the time you take the standard deduction or whatever other exemptions and deductions hit your return, oftentimes it's not taxable. But yeah, just to add a little insult to injury there, that it is subject to the income tax.
So the government gets some of that money back.
Sometimes they do. Yeah. Again, like I said, if that makes up the bulk of the income on the return, chances are the total tax on that return would show a zero.
What about estimated taxes? Who is required to estimate their taxes year in, year out?
If you're short on your individual income tax return and you owe more than 10% of what your total liability is, then the IRS says we can charge you a penalty for the underpayment of your estimated tax. Now, the interest rate that the IRS charges on that is very low. It's about a 3% interest rate for the underpayment of estimated tax. So it's not a penalty that a lot of people get real worked up about because it's such a small percentage. But for those people who have their income from interest, dividends, maybe rental properties, or other sources of income where there's no withholding, generally those are the folks that should be paying the quarterly estimated taxes.
Okay, so it's people in this particular category. Even if they have gotten a refund, they are required to...
Yeah, now, if they got a refund, then it would be because they have withholding from other sources that was high enough to cover not only the W-2, but maybe also their interest, dividends, capital gains, whatever it might be. If you're in a refund position every year, there's no need, and that refund's from withholding, from your W-2, or maybe you have withholdings from your Social Security check or whatever it might be, then there's no need for an estimated tax payment.
The issue of charity, you had mentioned that earlier in the program. Are we still pretty much on the same wavelength we have been with regard to donations?
Yeah, not a lot of big changes in the charity area. You want to be sure that you have the thank you letters back from the charity. You know, one good website that I stumbled across, I think it might have been during last filing season, people are always donating clothing and furniture and appliances, and you never know what value to put on those. The Salvation Army helps sponsor a website called, it's ssatruck.org, like Salvation Army Truck. .org and then /donations-value-guide. And it's a wonderful website that says if you have, you know, this appliance and it works and it's in good condition, it's worth this number of dollars. It's a very handy donation value guide.
Well, part of that title is truck. A lot of organizations, including our own, ask people if they have an extra car, if they want to donate that. Same deal?
Well, the donation of the cars works a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. If it's a completely non-working vehicle and, you know, they just take it off your hands, you'll get that donation of roughly $500. But if it is an operating vehicle and you give it to a charity who won't put it in their fleet, in other words, they're going to take the car and then sell it and use the proceeds for whatever their exempt purpose is, then that organization has to report to the donor how much they sold the car for. And then the individual's tax return, the deduction amount on their personal return, is limited to the amount that the organization sold it for.
Couple of steps involved in that process.
It's a little tough to do a car donation between Christmas and New Year's and have it all worked out by the time you want to file your return.
Sure. You're listening to Lance Weiss. He's a CPA with SFW Partners. That's a tax and accounting firm here locally. We're doing our annual tax talk here and taking your questions you might have as we approach the tax deadline, which I'll remind everyone, if you don't already know or realize it, it's a week from tomorrow. Back with more questions for Lance Weiss, and we have some lines open, folks. If you'd like to get into it, do so at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet if you like at STL on Air. Back with Lance Weiss in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back. As we continue our conversation with CPA Lance Weiss, we're taking tax questions, and we'll go right to the phones and start with Mike calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yes, I already filed my taxes, and I have a IRA and a Roth, and I bought some what I thought were stocks. And in March, after I filed my taxes, I got a K-1 for both these two stocks, one in my IRA and one in my Roth account. Do I need to do anything with those? I thought everything in those accounts are not taxable.
Well, for the most part, everything inside the IRA and the Roth account are tax-free. They're not taxable. But many of these publicly traded partnerships generate K-1s, and people think they're stocks, but they're not. You're actually buying a partnership interest. But it's publicly traded, and you buy it on the stock exchange. So it's you're one of 150 million people that was under the same impression. So certainly no harm there. But there's another unknown, or I'll say not very widely known, income tax that can apply to the IRA and the Roth IRAs called the unrelated business taxable income tax. Now, if the sum of the income, and not the distributions that came out, but if the sum of the income on those K-1s is more than $1,000, then yes, the IRAs do have to file their own income tax return and then actually pay the tax.
Okay, Mike?
Just the IRA or both Roth?
No, it can apply to both the regular IRA and the Roth IRA. And the form you're going to use there, it's not a Form 1040 that we use on the individual side. It's on a Form 990 where you'll pay that unrelated business tax.
Okay, but it has to be over $1,000.
Yes, as long as you're under $1,000, you'll be in the clear.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, so we got a couple more forms that we become acquainted with on that
particular
question.
Well, you know, and these publicly traded partnerships are becoming very popular. You know, a lot of people are out there searching for, you know, different alternative type investments, and you know, with the oil boom and everything else, these pipeline companies and a lot of the oil exploration and gas exploration entities are taxed as partnerships. And so they issue K-1s. And I really have to caution my clients when they put them in IRAs and retirement accounts, because you could be putting another burden on that administrator to actually file an income tax return for the IRA.
I have a question here from someone who obviously uses public transportation and no doubt has fingers crossed now as awaiting your answer. Is there any kind of a tax break or deduction for using public transportation?
Well, on the public transportation side, if the employer pays up to, and don't hold me to the number, but it's like $210 or $230 per month that the employer can pay for their employees, and it's not taxable income. Now, not many employers do that sort of a reimbursement, but to the extent it does come as a fringe benefit, it can be a tax-free fringe benefit. But no, if an individual just pays for their own public transportation, that's not a deductible expense.
All right. To the phones, and Dave calling from New Haven, Missouri. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi. Yeah, my question concerns life insurance payouts. Are those taxable?
Okay, so the life insurance payouts, if they're paid out because someone passed away and now you're collecting the death benefit, unless that death benefit is going into a C corporation, they're income tax free. So if a relative passed away and you collect the death benefit, then there's no income tax on that life insurance benefit. However,
okay,
if that's the question. That's great. But if you have a life insurance policy that's built up significant cash value and you cancel the policy and just take the cash value back out, some of that can be taxable. But in general, the insurance companies are very good about tracking the basis and telling you what portion of that might be subject to tax.
There's more than one type of corporations, obviously. C corporation, S corporation, limited liability corporation.
Right.
How do these differ, and what's a tax advantage of one over another, if there is any? Uh-oh, you're looking at your watch.
Don, I looked at my watch. We've got not quite 15 minutes left. And one of the other things I do is I teach 8-hour long continuing ed classes on that question for other CPAs. So there's quite a bit to get into. But in general, a C corporation will pay its own income tax, which is great if you want to buy stock in InBev or Monsanto or some of these other companies, because you don't want to have to pay income tax on their share of the income. So C corporations tend to be your bigger publicly traded type companies. Your smaller companies, your family-owned companies, those tend to be either S corporations or LLCs. And at the entity level, they don't pay any income tax. All that income is included on the shareholders' or the owners' income tax returns. And so there's only one layer of tax, as opposed to the Monsantos of the world. They pay tax, and then when they pay a dividend, the owners pay a tax.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a place for all of them in the tax world.
Sure. Well, you did very well in that just a minute or two. Linda writes in an email, my husband's mother died last year. Some months before, she had put my husband's name on her checking account. He closed out the account after her death. It had about $110,000 in it. How do we report this?
Well, the $110,000 that came out would not be taxable. It was in an after-tax account. Your husband inherited the amount, and it's not taxable income. Now, to the extent that checking account earned any interest during the year, for the portion of the year that mom was alive, that interest income would go on her return. And then for the portion of the year that her husband obviously pulled the cash out, it would go on their return.
Okay. Pretty simple.
Pretty
cut and
but,
dry.
You know, and people get these inheritances, and it happens. The good news there is that it's not taxable. Now, if it comes from an IRA account and you inherit and then withdraw from that IRA, those are taxable. Mm. But if the checking account is in, you know, just an after-tax account in mom's name, that's passed on to the next generation without any tax.
Boy, this stuff is complicated. I don't know how you keep it all straight in your mind, but you do a terrific job with it. Let's go to Robert calling from Creve Coeur. Mm-hmm. Robert, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, a couple questions on clarifications of previous callers. The one woman who got the settlement, it sounded like she said that part of that settlement, besides the interest, was a refund on some filing fee. So would that be considered income, or would that just be a reimbursement for something she had already paid? And I have a second question, which is with the Affordable Care Act. If you're paying too much in your monthly premiums and your income is less than you thought it was going to be because you're estimating what your income is, from what I understand, you will get a refund from the IRS because you effectively have overpaid your premium based on your estimate of your income. Am I?
So on the Obamacare refunds, when they go back to check what the actual income is, if they do send you the refund on that, I think the question was, would that amount be taxable?
Robert, are you still there? Get closer to the phone if you're still there. Apparently not.
Okay. Oh, I'm here. Well, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. We kind of cut off there. So let's do the settlement piece of this first. So if someone wins a lawsuit, the winning of that lawsuit is generally subject to the income tax. Now, if they have something broken out where they say, we are returning your fees, then, you know, I suppose that could be a return of amounts you previously paid. But for the most part, you know, when you win the lawsuit, those amounts are taxable. So I guess we'd have to look at what the actual letter said.
Okay.
And then if you have a lower premium because your income turns out to be lower, you get some of that reimbursement back, they're actually returning your premiums, not giving you an excess subsidy.
Right. Okay.
Right. Very good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Let's go to Steve in Belleville. Steve, thank you for waiting. You're on the air with Lance Weiss.
Thanks for taking my call. I filed a claim with the VA, and it took them 2.5 years to process it. And so I received a VA retroactive pay, and I'm 100% disabled. There's no 1099, and it doesn't tell me anything about where to put it on my tax return, or do I need to put it on my tax return?
You know, Don just sat there across from me and said how rarely I'm stumped, but I think you have me on this one. So if maybe the producer could get your number, I could give you a call back later today, and then I'll try to take a stab at it as we sit here. I'm going to say, in general, that VA claim would not be subject to the income tax.
Well, I know it's not taxable,
okay.
But I don't know where to put it or do I need to put it.
Yeah, then it would not be reported on the return. But I'd really want to take a look at that letter to make sure that it doesn't need that, you know, to make sure that it's not a taxable event. But if you've read something in there that says it's not taxable, then it also does not have to be reported.
They told me that as long as it was combat related and they told me in the letter it was not taxable.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the exemptions that there. All the combat-related type claims are paid with, and they're not subject to the income tax.
All right, I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you do contact Lance, I guarantee you it will not take him 2.5 years to get back to you. That just makes me mad. Doggone it. Okay, Katie in St. Charles, go ahead. You're on the air with Lance.
Hi, I have a question about the alternative minimum tax, and if I don't claim, whether it's better for my kids to say I'm not being claimed on my parents' return and filing their own return. Is that more beneficial for them, or should they still say I'm being claimed as my parents?
Right. Well, the parents claiming the kids really isn't you can release the exemption and the kids can claim themselves. But other than that formal release, it's really a mathematical test as to who's providing the support.
I have a senior a son who just graduated from college. So typically I would go in and say, yes, I can still claim him because I did support him for more than half the year. But he's also now got a full-time job. So is it in his interest for me to say, no, I'm not going to claim him since I'm not going to get the deduction anyway?
Yeah, chances are that he probably should be claiming himself because if he had that full-time job for more than half the year and you guys went through the math to do the support test, he may have provided more than half of his own support. Even though you supported him for half the year while he was in college, he may have had the more expensive half of the year and provided more than half of his support. And then the quick answer to your question is, if you're in the AMT, there's almost no benefit for you claiming him as a dependent. And there will certainly be a benefit on his return if he claims himself.
Okay, so if I already did my taxes and I had the ATM hit me, and he has not filed his taxes, can he claim himself even though technically on I said I was claiming him but didn't? Get the benefit?
That's one of those things where if you both try to, since you've already, did you e-file your return?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So since you e-filed your return, if he goes to e-file his return, it'll be bounced back almost instantly because the IRS will know the Social Security number has already been claimed on another return.
Right.
So what you want to do is amend your return to not claim the exemption because, again, chances are the math has been passed and he needs to claim himself as a dependent. And then he should probably file a paper return this year just to give the IRS the documents in front of him, very likely that the return would be bounced anyway because it's already on file that he's been claimed as a dependent.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your call. We have an email here from Carrie, full-time grad student who made very little money, under $10,000. I file head of household and have one daughter. I noticed that it made no difference whether I used my house taxes and PMI fees or not. Is this possible due to my low income, or am I doing something wrong?
It's most likely possible and correct because the standard deduction is higher than what his house taxes are. So that standard deduction, I don't recall the exact number on a head of household return, but I think it's in that $8,000-$9,000 range, which would far exceed any real estate tax bill for most folks. So I would say that's very likely that they won't help.
Okay, Carrie, hope that helps. Let's be joined now by Frank calling from Creve Coeur. Go ahead, Frank, you're on the air.
I have a question about my brother is a 1099 independent contractor or courier. And on his Schedule C, there's an opportunity to take a credit for health care expenses. He gets his health care from his wife's job, and on her W-2, under box 12 and 14, it is blank. And I'm interpreting that to mean that it is not a subsidized plan, just a private plan, and therefore he is eligible to claim that credit. Is that accurate?
Well, if the employer had fewer than, I think it's 250 tax returns they could file, so W-2s, 1099s, and the rest, then the employer doesn't have to put any information in the box 12 and 14. So okay. I think it's probably a phone call to his spouse's employer to find out if that health plan is, in fact, a reimbursed plan. But, yeah, if it's not, then he can certainly claim a self-employed health insurance deduction. Now, it's not a credit. It's a deduction that flows through on page one, but that can certainly help mitigate the tax that's due.
Okay, I lost you on most of that. So
I guess the short form of the answer would be have her double-check to make sure that it's not a subsidized plan.
Okay. Going forward, he's going to join – he has joined the health care plan, the government health care plan. Now, is he going to qualify next year? If it is indeed, we find out that the spouse – my sister-in-law has a subsidized plan.
Yeah, if the plan is at all subsidized, then he would not be eligible for that page one deduction of the health insurance.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Peggy in Millstadt. Peggy, go ahead, but time's running out.
Hi.
We'll have to be quick.
Yes, I'll try. Received 1 month of Social Security in 2013 that it did not cover my cost of Medicare, so I really didn't get it. Did not receive a 1099. The local Social Security office says since it doesn't cover the cost of Medicare, I do not have to put that as income. Hope that's true because I already did my taxes.
Well, if they send you a notice, it'll just be a basic matching notice that an amount wasn't picked up, and chances are it wouldn't be taxable anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. I'm going to take one last call. Robert in O'Fallon, Missouri, but this really has to be fast. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think you talked about this earlier, but I missed most of it. I filed my taxes electronically. IRS rejected it, saying there's already a tax return on file with this social. And I think you said 9 times out of 10 that is just a typo.
Well, you know, our experience has been that most of the time it doesn't mean that all of your other assets are at risk and your entire identity has been stolen and all the bad things in the world that would happen. Most of the time we found that it is just someone else made a key punch error and they used your Social Security number. But please go check your freecreditreport.com. Go to the IRS's website. There's a publication there called Pub 4535. That has some great detail on what to do if your identity has been compromised. So I would say, you know, be cautious and certainly check this out as quickly as you can. But most of the time, it doesn't end in the horrible news. It just means a delayed refund.
Hope that helps. Yes, we did cover that earlier, but we can't mention that enough, I guess, because a lot of this is going on. Lance Weiss, we've gone full cycle in the program. That's where we started, and that's where we have to end it. I'm sorry to those who are waiting that we couldn't get to. Tried to get as many questions in as we could, and, of course, Lance, you answered them with your usual aplomb. Thank you so much.
I try.
All right. We'll see you again next year, if not before. I hope sooner. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with former Post-Dispatch religion reporter Tim Townsend about his new book detailing St. Louis minister Henry Gericke's work as an army chaplain to the Nazi leaders imprisoned and tried at Nuremberg for crimes against humanity. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.